and definitely didn't dig in. I think it's your time to dig in right now. But this is such an exciting story, and I'd love to see. I mean, Tracy, you've done a lot of great things. I saw the videos that you have when you were on the show, and you've got some really great content. So I wanted to recommend to anybody, you know, you can go look up a lot of those links were on LinkedIn, and we can send those over. But, you know, really great articles and things covering, I think, so many things around life lessons and just really what it's like being an entrepreneur, a woman entrepreneur, and everything else. So I encourage you guys to go ahead and take a look at that. So what we're going to do is just have sort of a free-form kind of conversation, and we'll definitely take some questions in the chats, and then Diana's going to sort of monitor that, and we can go ahead and ask those questions as well. I think we're going to run for about 30 or 40 minutes or something like that, so we'll do that. But anyway, so just going into the kind of the content, so Tracy, thanks again for being here, and thanks for the cupcakes. I ate them. They gave me a sugar rush. It was, you know, wonderful. But I wanted to talk to you because I think, you know, you have that entrepreneurial spirit, which is something that every company wants to get, getting a little feedback, you know, wants to instill that in their corporation and inside the people. So I wanted to sort of just kind of get from you, like, what sort of drove you really to kind of, you know, really create your own business in the first place? What was the kind of the key drivers? And then how do you kind of make sure that you get that, you know, spirit within your employees?
Sure. Thank you, Steve. First of all, happy birthday, everybody, and congratulations on your growth. That is amazing. I know how tough that is and what an accomplishment it is. So kudos to you for doing such a great job. Clearly, you have a great team, and great teams are just the lifeblood of any business, right?
Absolutely. So
my story is probably a little bit different from your coworkers. I was the oldest girl in a family of three kids, only girl. And my father was very, very old school, and he didn't believe that it was necessary for me to go to college. And this was really heartbreaking for me because I was a straight-A student in high school. I went to a college prep school and was really excited about the possibility of doing something big, right? And within a 10-minute conversation, all of my dreams were really dashed, and it was devastating. So needless to say, I did not go to school. I ended up getting married and having two kids really, really young, and although my ex-husband was brilliant in his own right, had a full scholarship to college and started off on a career, it wasn't fulfilling for me. And I really wanted to do something on my own. So I decided I was going to find what I was passionate about. I was going to follow that, and I was going to figure out how to create a business. And that's what I did. I found that I had a talent for photography. I knew that I couldn't go to college and I didn't have the money. So what I did was I worked as a photo assistant in Boston. And I literally got paid to learn. And as I got paid, I would buy equipment. And there reached a point where I was finally able to break out and start my own business. Within a year and a half of being in Boston, I became one of the most sought-after commercial photographers. My niche was photographing children for advertising, which no one really wanted to do because it's not easy. It was great. I had a 3-year run where I should back up the truck a little. During this time, I got divorced. Now I have two kids. I'm running this business, and I was able to buy my own home. I took my kids to Disney World. Like, these were big accomplishments for me, not having gone to school. But then, as luck would have it, I was shooting film and digital photography came in. I knew nothing about technology. So really overnight, my business was a dinosaur. I lost all my clients because they all jumped on the digital bandwagon, and I found I had to reinvent myself again. And this is what I did throughout my life. I started different businesses. Some I was successful at. I was a animal wrangler. I had an animal talent agency. I trained animals for television and movies. When that got to be too chaotic, I switched gears and I became a real estate agent and I sold horse farms. Like, I did all kinds of things. The thing I think that I never lost sight of was I had to depend on myself, and I had to be able to take care of myself. And that was a real motivating factor for me.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, that's great. And then all that experience must, like, there's all that different type of experience. But I can see as you go from thing to thing to thing, like, you're carrying things with you, right, throughout the whole thing and able to leverage it. Yeah. And then, and so now you've got this business, which is great. It's and again, a lot of views, if you go online, you take a look at it. It's a really fun and inspirational business. And how, in terms of your own teams, how do you kind of get that going, right? Because I feel like that's the value is, you know, getting your team members to think like they're their own business people, right? Because that's how new ideas form. That's how new businesses start. You could have businesses starting out of your business. Additional, that's what we did. Hive came out of Cynix. It was an idea and it grew. And then we have additional services and things. There's a lot of things that come out of it. So how do you sort of get your employees to sort of do the same thing?
And for us, the first place we started was we never called our employees. They were always coworkers. I felt like that term really set a different tone in the business. And then we gave our coworkers some ownership in that they had a voice.
Yeah.
If they had an idea, if they wanted to donate to a specific charity, if they anything that they could think of that they wanted to present, we would listen, and a lot of times we would adopt what they wanted to do because they were great ideas, and they were going to fulfill our mission as a company, as people, as a business. So I would say by listening and talking and having a great dialogue with your coworkers, that really helped us and helped form a very strong bond. We have some people who have been with us since day one. Still, which is very unusual in the food industry.
Yeah, that's great. And then sort of going to that whole Shark Tank episode, which sort of like was a life changer. I do think that there's a lot of things that occur in the life of a business, and there's pivotal moments, right? We actually had one for ourselves, which was when Facebook, we ended up having Facebook. That blew us up. I mean, that was crazy when that happened. And so your pivotal moment, I would have to say, or you tell me if this is right or not, was the Shark Tank episode. Or maybe you've had other pivotal moments too. But if you could kind of share kind of what those moments were like and what that moment was like for you.
Sure. So we had two pivotal moments. The first pivotal moment was when we decided exactly how to define the business. And by that, I mean it was putting the cake in the mason jars, right? That was our definer. That made us, that separated us and was our differentiator. You can see on the screen, so these were the types of cupcakes we were making, and we would have people contact us and ask us if we could ship across the country. And so think about it. How do you ship a cupcake, right? They're fragile. They get stale quickly. We had to figure out a way to do this so that when the consumer received them, they weren't disappointed. They weren't smashed or melted. So we came up with the idea of putting everything in a mason jar. So that was our, like, smaller pivotal moment, or maybe bigger, depending on how you look at it. And, of course, the second moment was our airing on Shark Tank. Shark Tank was, for us, a commercial in front of 8 to 10 million viewers. And you just cannot, as a young company with, you know, not a lot of revenue, you cannot buy that type of exposure. So that was really important for us. And that really put us on the map. And, you know, we have a very viral product. If people receive it and they like it, chances are they're going to send it as a gift. And, you know, adopting a corporate identity and corporate gifting has been very, very big for us as well. So being able to brand the jar, put a corporate logo on a jar for weddings, putting the date or the bride and groom's picture or their name on a jar, all of that really just sort of grew organically and helped us to grow to where we are today.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, you know, you mentioned, and I can see the Shark Tank, obviously, is the critical or pivotal moment. But when you think about it, your first thing, which was the genius thing, which was the jar, right? Because that was your whole hook in the first place, right? And I'm also wondering, it was probably even, I don't know if it was more or less labor intensive, because that was a lot of decorations on those other cupcakes. And these are sort of like very compact. But But whose idea was it to stick it in the jar? Was it like, you know, yours, Daddy's, the employees, or?
All right, so this is a funny story. So my husband's company, a software company, built us a website, and when people searched in Boston for cupcakes, they would come across us. And as I said, we really couldn't find good packaging. We ordered from everybody who was shipping cupcakes to see what they were doing. And one night, my husband, who's a complete workaholic, was up late. The TV was on in the background. It was a food channel, and there was a show about canning. And it happened to catch his ear. He woke me up. He was so excited. It was like 1 in the morning. I was so mad at him. I thought it was the dumbest idea. But after he kept pestering me and pestering me, I said, fine, we're going to do this. We're going to beta test it. We're going to send it to friends and family across the country. We're not going to tell them what we're sending. We're going to send them a questionnaire. We're going to have them fill it out, and we're going to have them take pictures of how the product arrives. And if 90% of them get it, yeah, then that's what we'll do. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. And I think that's great, right? Because it's sort of like, you don't know, there's like ideas come from everywhere, but it's sort of like capitalizing. It's the decision making, right, around that, like, we're going to do that thing, right? You're going to choose or make the right decision around it. But that, yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, it was a great cake. It was very moist. I didn't eat mine until like yesterday. And it was, I think, and it held up great. It was really good. But yeah. And then, so just Shark Tank in general, you know, your experience, you want to sort of talk a bit more because you had to walk in. That's got to be nerve-wracking. I mean, first of all, you're pitching your idea. Now you're doing it on national television. In a lot of ways, did you wonder, like, gosh, did you ever think, or did you not think? You just said, go for it. Or because that moment you're thinking, like, I'm going to put myself out on the line, like, on national television. You know, what was that like?
Oh, it was really terrifying. I remember before the door swung open, I literally said to my producer, the room is tiny that you stand in, and the producer was kind of tucked in the corner, and I said to her, I think I'm going to be sick, and she said, well, you'll be fine, and my daughter kind of gave me a nudge. It is intense, and you have to keep your wits about you. You really need to be very well-versed because they're all very big personalities, the sharks, and they all talk over each other. And you're trying really hard to not sound like an idiot on national television, to sound like you know what you're talking about, to stay upbeat, because Danny and I promised each other that we wouldn't make faces or you know, we would stay upbeat. And that was tough. I was more afraid of the aftermath, like what social media would say and how social media might affect us or affect people's view of us. I've since learned that there are internet trolls out there and you just cannot pay attention to what people say. We had a lot of men who were tweeting that night that I was just stupid and I made the worst deal ever and that women should just stay in the kitchen. And you know, people were saying stuff about my daughter's tattoos and personal attacks. And my husband finally said, enough. We'll have other people answer the tweets. You can't look at this anymore. You have a business to run. Your greatest revenge is going to be your success. And he was right. It was an amazing experience. I am grateful every single day that we had this experience. Kevin's been wonderful to work with. Shark Tank has been amazing with us. I think we're the only company that's had 5 updates. We've had like 3 solo updates and 2 combined updates. We're definitely a legacy company for them. We get to do a lot of things for them because they like us. They love the mother-daughter vibe. And I think we're just like that typical, you know, American success story, you know, two mother-daughter who start in the kitchen and just grow this national brand. So, you know, it was a lot of work preparing for and a ton of work after, but it was totally worth it, and I would do it again and again and again.
Yep. So you had a very interesting deal, which I thought was great, and I wanted to, but I don't know if everybody knows what the deal is. So do you want to explain, like, the deal that you were offered and what you guys kind of came up with?
Sure. So the deal we settled on was we would pay Kevin back. We We asked for $75,000 in exchange for 20% equity. And Kevin did not take any equity. Instead, he wanted a royalty. So what he wanted was $1 per jar until the $75,000 was paid back. And then it would drop to 45 cents a jar. So the $75,000 we paid back in 6 weeks. We're completely done with that. And we dropped from the dollar a jar down to the 45 cents a jar, which was really cool. And a year ago, July, we gave Kevin his $1,000,000 royalty check, which was, so 2 Julys ago, he got his $1,000,000 royalty check, which was a huge deal for us to hit the $1,000,000 mark on 45 cents a jar. The notoriety we've got and all the positive we got from the show has given us opportunities to do things like we did Ellen DeGeneres' 60th birthday. We've done rap parties for shows like Dancing with the Stars. We've done more movie premieres. We do work for companies like Facebook, Discover Credit Cards, Warner Brothers, you name it, sport, you know, a lot of sports athlete stars buy from us. And of course, our wonderful customers. So the exposure again was just amazing. I think an ad agency did some calculations that was a $2 to $3 million commercial that we were given by being on Shark Tank.
Yeah. And that's why I think that was brilliant, because it's like that was just for Shark Tank. But now you've got Kevin engaged. He's got he's got a reason to stay engaged.
And absolutely.
Right? And so absolutely. When you think about it, it's like you paid him $1 million. In a lot of ways, it's like, I mean, I just feel like, you know, you got a fantastic deal out of that one because you got somebody that's helping market you all over the place. So, I mean, it's amazing to think that budget, that marketing budget put you here at this point with this kind of exposure is a great deal. I mean, for you guys, it was fantastic.
So the royalty deal is great if you're making money. It's not something, you know, if you have any company debt and you're not really turning an income yet, then equity is a better play for you. But we have never as a company been in debt. As a matter of fact, right now we have zero debt. So we were always generating money. So it made sense to us to do the royalty deal because we kept 100% of our equity.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. And you do sort of touch on some of this, when you talk about the internet trolling and things like that. So there's always some gender bias out there, right? And so, you know, you're a woman out there, you started this business, you know, and sort of like, how do you, you know, you sort of mentioned some of the kind of the comments that you got, you know, how's the best way to deal with that? You know, how does that, I'm sure it feels not good. And then, you know, kind of how do you sort of channel that or any advice you have for people that are sort of seeing or, you know, feeling the same type of thing?
So my advice to you is just work hard and be successful. Because like I said before, that truly is your greatest revenge. And revenge is such an ugly word. But honestly, for me, at some points, that's really what I wanted, because the cruelty of comments was so unnecessary and uncalled for, but a reality. It was interesting to me. For 3 years, I was a finalist in the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year for New England award, and they have their awards dinner, and I went. And the last year that I was there, I had an interesting thing happen. My husband was speaking to a gentleman, and my husband and I, if you can imagine, were back-to-back, and I was talking to another woman, and I could hear the conversation going on behind me. And a gentleman was saying to my husband, so you must be the brains of the operation, right? You're the one who makes all this happen. And my husband was kind of shocked. And he said, well, no, we're a family business and we each have our strengths and we each bring a lot of ideas and things to the business. And the gentleman kept pushing him, saying, no, really, really, you're the one. You're the smart one. You're the one who's the brains of the operation. And my husband started to object, and I turned around and looked, and this man looked at me and he said, you look so lovely tonight. And I thought, So I look lovely, but he's the brains of the operation. And it exists. It just is. What made me more upset that same night was I sat next to a professor who taught a women's entrepreneur class at UMass. And he was all over me for Kevin O'Leary's contact information because he wanted a strong business personality to come in and speak to his class, someone who was inspirational. And I'm thinking, here I am, a woman who like grew this business with no money, no formal culinary training, no college degree, no MBA, and I was 50 years old when we filmed our segment for Shark Tank. I'm sorry, wouldn't I be a better person? I don't know. It's just because it was Kevin and he was a guy, and you know, I've gotten used to it and I've totally gotten over it. I know, again, like I said, it exists. I just really encourage women to believe in themselves and to know that they have just as much right to climb that ladder and to be as successful as any man. And I speak a lot to women's groups, and I absolutely love it, and I love hearing their stories, and I love hearing their successes, and I share my failures, and it's just, there's a special place in hell for women who don't support other women, and I think women are really great at lifting other women and helping them succeed, more so than men. I hate to say it, but that's been my experience personally.
Yeah. I mean, that is, it's fantastic. And I think that, you know, that drive to continue, and even when you're facing a lot of negativity, right, that's the thing that's sort of like, you've got to just keep going, right? Otherwise, they do win. So I think that's right. Great that you're doing that. Yeah. And I do think I'm always very impressed by people that can go through what you're doing. You know, you went through so many different types of careers and jobs, you kept growing them, and you know, you weren't an expert in these areas, but that didn't stop you from saying, you know, I've got a good idea, you know, and I'm going to do it anyway. And so, you know, what do you think it was within you? Like, where does that come from? Because, you know, I wish it was like standard equipment on all human beings, but it's not, right? So like, where does that come from?
I think it's a couple things. So ever since I was little, I always felt like I was going to do something that was big. And, you know, define big. It could be anything. But I had this feeling inside me that I really wanted to do something. I wanted people to be proud of me. And then another point that I think is really important is a lot of people know they want to do something and they want to have something that is their own. But they overwhelm themselves by thinking, you know, I have to, you know, reinvent the wheel, or I need to invent fire. And quite honestly, some of the most successful entrepreneurs are the ones who take an existing product or thing, service, whatever, and they put their spin on it and make it better.
Yep.
Right? So how many times have you picked up something and said, you know, this bottle's great, but I would do this, and then it would work better. Those people are so successful. And I think that you just really need I write stuff down. If I have ideas, if I have a story, if I have a quote that I like, if I have anything, I write it down and review it and think, how can I use this? How can I make this work? That's just how my mind is. It's always moving. Look, we took a cupcake. Everyone's been baking cupcakes since I don't know when. We just put it in a mason jar. That's all we did. And so having your own thing or creating something or doing something can be as simple as that.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I 100% agree with that in a lot of ways. That's what we were as well, right? You took an idea and you just made it better. You, obviously, people are buying servers, but there's a reason why people wanted our servers, right? It was sort of like, what are we doing? Are we listening to the customer? And the one thing I always think about is, you know, think about Steve Jobs. He's the ultimate guy in a lot of ways. You know, it's like, you know, you don't know that you need an iPhone until I show you an iPhone. And that's a pretty, like, high standard, right? But you're absolutely right. It's like that type of understanding an idea. And the one thing I thought was so interesting was there's this, at the time it was Xerox PARC, and it was Xerox, and they created a GUI interface, which is a graphical user interface, which is a great idea, but then they didn't do anything with it, but Apple did. They basically turned that into their main operating system, basically that way of dealing with things as opposed to all the typing of the operating system. I mean, a lot of ways that was saying, I see something that you did, I'm going to make it a lot better, and I'm going to put it out there for the masses. But I totally agree with you. I think that most of the, occasionally you get these things that nobody thinks of, but a lot of the really great ideas in successful businesses come from something that is an improvement on something already, right? I totally agree. I think that it's sort of, and I think it's great for people to hear that and understand that. Because, you know, otherwise they'll miss that opportunity, right? They'll miss the thing that's in front of them. And that's the thing that I want people to be able to do. And, you know, it is at our company, we have a lot of resources. We have a lot of talent. We have money. We have lots of things, locations. And people can take that and say, I want to grow another business. I want to grow something out of this. Here, I'm sitting in fertile soil, right? And that's what I was too. Our company was, we're sitting in fertile soil. We've got like all kinds of resources and we have talent. And how do we go ahead and go after a new market? And it's, we didn't reinvent anything, but we saw a market and we caught it at the right time. But yeah, I think that is like so important, the thing that you stated, because I think that's what where most of the successful businesses came from. And like you said too, it's the people, right? It's the heart and it's the people. And if you get a good crew of people, you just got to hang on to them, right? Because that's what's going to propel you forward going, you know, into the future.
Exactly. But, that goes back to, right, listening to your coworkers.
Yeah.
Giving them the freedom to propose an idea. Because sometimes we get so caught up in doing something one way and we get stuck in such tunnel vision, we don't see around a problem. And that's when it's so invaluable to have other people who are really on board with the company, with the mission of the company. And they're then excited to bring their idea forward. It's a collaboration. It's definitely not a dictatorship having a business. And people who run their business that way are destined to fail. They're destined to fail.
Right. Yeah. Because they're not pulling in, I think, enough new ideas and things to keep. Because you've got to continue to grow, right? You've got to continue to pull in new ideas or
absolutely.
It's stale. I mean, it's, you know, you have to change it. But yeah, well, I appreciate this conversation very much. And I think, and I didn't focus a lot on your cupcakes, which are delicious. And that's because I felt like your story and your, you know, your journey and how you approach business was just so inspiring. So I didn't spend a lot of time on the cupcakes, but a lot more time on that other portion, because I think it's so valuable. And I love to hear, there's nothing more exciting than being able to talk to people that have done this. And, you know, it's really great. So thank you very much for spending the time with us. I did want to open this up to other people to have those questions too. So I'm going to give this over to Diana for additional questions. Do you have anything, Diana, that's out there?
I haven't had anybody bring up a question, but I have one for you.
Okay.
Sure.
As a mom myself of two daughters, I think it's amazing that you built this incredible business with your daughter. I don't know if my daughters would do anything with me, especially, you know, their teenage years and all that kind of stuff. Can you talk about, you know, did she come to you? Did you go to her and say, hey, let's start this business together?
Yeah, so it's an interesting story. So the reason that this company even exists is because my daughter was diagnosed with bipolar disease, which at the time we didn't know. She was struggling and we were really concerned about her, but did not know at the time what the problem was. So she had moved out of the house and I asked her to see me once a week so I could lay eyes on her and make sure she was okay. And she dropped out of college with one class left to graduate, and that was very concerning. So I tried to help her light her fire and figure out what she wanted to do. She was very creative, very artsy, and just not a student, and I got that. So after trying several different things, I suggested we take a cake decorating class together, and she agreed, thank God, and that's what we did. And we started posting our images of what we were doing online, and people started to order from us. But the real story behind that is it is really difficult to work with your family. It's a joy and a blessing, but it also has its stress points. And I'm type A and Danny is type Z. I mean, we could not be any further apart. And that did create some tension for us. And I had a really hard time turning off the mom gene, which made it really difficult for her. And one day I was in my office and she came in and she said to me, I have to talk to you. I can't stand this anymore. I am going to quit this job because all you talk about is business at dinner. If we go out somewhere, it's business, 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 business. I need you to be my mom part of the time. And that was really eye-opening for me and made me realize that while business is great and while we may have our differences at work, we go home and leave the shop as a family. We are a family at home first. And I think that was the difficult part. And we thankfully resolved it, and it works now. And sometimes I'll say to her, can we just talk about business for 1 minute if we're out somewhere else? And she'll say yes. But I had to recognize in my own self that I was being difficult and that I was not being an easy person to work with. And that's hard.
Yeah, that's still a great story. So we do have a couple questions, or one question in particular that came up from Alexander Fong. He says, hey, Tracy, the cupcakes taste good. Since your business relies on glass jars, I'd like to know what steps, if any, your company takes to minimize your environmental impact.
Sure. So that's a great question. And we ask our customers to recycle or repurpose the jars, which they do. And it's really fun because they send us a lot of photos of what they're actually doing with the mason jars, whether they make like little mini gardens or they use them to make lights or they've used them for vases or storing spices. They find a way to repurpose the glass.
Oh, that's great. I definitely appreciate the glass. Definitely less waste on my side too.
Yeah.
Joseph says, great cupcakes. Appreciate it. And Then, Vonnie, I don't know if I'm saying your name right. This might be an interesting question, especially after Steve's sugar rush. Do you have any cupcake options for diabetics? Is that on your roadmap at all?
We do have a sugar-free cupcake that we've been working with, and we've had great success using a product called Locanto. I don't know if anyone uses that. It's a monk fruit sweetener, and it's great because it doesn't have an awful aftertaste. So we're working on that right now. So, yes, another great question, and we are definitely working on that.
That sounds great. And that's kind of all the questions that we have at the moment. Anybody else have any questions? Oh, Victoria loves Locanto. So you've got one big thumbs up there. You know, I do have another question for you, Tracy. You know, one of the themes that keeps coming up in your discussion with Steve is your family support. You know, we talked about your daughter for a second, but it sounds like your husband has been quite the cheerleader for you along this whole, you know, this crazy road. What is his role? Does he have a role in the business?
Yes. So my husband has a huge role in the business. And I have to say, if it were not for him, we never would have grown to the level that we did. My husband's a really brilliant man. He had a software company in Boston that he started, and he left probably about a year into our business after Shark Tank. He wanted to make sure that the business was viable and that we would be able to support ourselves once he left his job. So he right now is, he does a number of things. He's our, you know, CTO, our CFO, our COO. He just has this amazing amount of data that he keeps, and he has a great way of, you know, supply chain, and he's really great with numbers and has kept us as a debt-free company for the, you know, 9 years that we've been in business. And again, you know, as husband and wife, we butt heads here and there, but generally speaking, we do, you know, see eye to eye, and the three of us are aligned in where the direction in which we want the company to go. And that's really important. I think for some families, if there's a person who is either taking advantage of the situation because they're a family member or they just have a different vision, it can be really difficult to grow a business as a family.
No, that's great. And we do have another question for you, Tracy, from Efrain Herrera. How do you push yourself through really challenging times?
I wasn't very good at it at that in the beginning, and I don't know if it was because I was just so tired all the time, but I try every day to do something that is for me, and by that I mean whether it's making sure I go out for a walk or I do something. I play music, so if I'm playing music, I play the drums, or if I just do something that takes my mind off and away from work. And it got to the point where I had to start scheduling a block of free time, because it's always the last time that people in business actually do for themselves, and you have to treat it like it's part of your day. So for any of you who are like me and were neglecting your own time, it's really a great idea to write it into your calendar for the day and just schedule yourself an hour of time. Even if you do nothing but lay on the couch and nap, it's just so important to take a mental break.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, because for the groups, you know, that are here during pandemic, I find it's like, oh, you know, let's just, you know, I don't have a commute, so we can have that meeting at 7:30 in the morning, or I don't have a commute, we could have that meeting at 7 o'clock at night. And and I think that it's interesting, but there's probably been even more burnout, because at least you get to commute, you know,
at least right. You
have the break. But I do think that's really important. The self-care thing is important. So that's, I think that's great advice. I think especially now, I think that's really, people have really struggled with that this year in particular.
Yeah. Well, there's no way, you're working from home, so there's that blurred line.
Yeah.
I know for my husband, it was really difficult not to go to the office and to work from home. And we had moved into a new house that had a really great setup, so he was very, very separate from the house when working, and that helped. And we take a break in the middle of the day now. We go out for like a 2-hour walk, and we just talk about work and about family and about, you know, plans we have. And it really mentally is the best thing.
Yep. That's great.
And we do have a couple more questions. Kimberly Simler Sadler. Hi, Kimberly. She used to own a restaurant, and as a female owner, she could not get funding from the SBA or anyone. She met all the criteria. However, she often felt it was because she was female. Did you ever have that experience?
You know, we never took a loan. The money I borrowed was from my husband. But, yeah, there are definitely things that I felt like I was excluded from. And even to the point of as small as a conversation, because I was a woman. And top that off with, I baked cupcakes. So who takes that seriously, right? Nobody. You know, they picture me with an easy bake oven with a pink polka-dotted apron on. I think that if you feel that way, I would investigate trying to get money from an angel investor, or look for the groups that actually give funding to women specifically. There are a lot of them out there, and I would seek out money from sources like that if you feel like that you've been discriminated against that way by the SBA.
Yeah, that's great. And that's all we have from questions. Kind of a last call for questions. Great, Steve, I can hand it over to you to wrap up if you'd like.
Okay, great.